Welcome to the Cat Attack Kerr's Hire podcast. We're back after a bye. Nobody wins.
Two byes.
We've had more byes than Alan Knott. He used to let through a few byes,
nah,
didn't he?
He was pretty good, actually, Alan Knott.
Was he?
Yeah, hello, Benny.
Yeah, hello, Kingy. We'll be fresh off a bye.
This is a very special edition, too.
Well, Kingy, I know that the Cat Attack podcast listeners will be... they'll be alarmed to know this, but we have done a little bit of homework.
We have.
Prior to this podcast. So we do have a little treat for you upcoming. But the Cats had a little treat for us in the last quarter against Melbourne.
Did you see that coming at three-quarter time?
No.
No.
Fair to say. And no. I haven't spoken to any Cat fan who did. I mean, they were in the game. I'm not suggesting that they weren't going to maybe scrape over the line or, you know, fall short by a goal or two, but... nobody saw the little burst that, what, five goals in about 10 minutes, given they'd only kicked five to that point in the game. Nobody saw that coming, King. It was electrifying football. Yes.
And sparked by the bloke wearing number four.
Yes, Andrew Mackie.
Gary Ablett Jr.
Andrew Wills.
Terry Bright.
Yes, the Mars Bar man, only ever gave us 90%. So... yeah, there was always 10% extra on the Mars bar, that which we used to call Terry Bright, because he always used to leave 10% in the locker. So he was the Mars bar man. It was sparked by the four. Look, I've been on his wagon. I don't know why anybody shouldn't be on his wagon.
I think you and I have both been fans of him.
Yeah, he's still a way away. Look, he might have a stinker on Friday night because he's young, but there's a lot to like about the way he plays. He plays with a bit of intensity,
yep,
and he finishes around goal.
Mm. Which a couple.
Yeah, he did, which is crucial. I mean, Kingy, do we have the Cats, they've been, you know, pretty good, so they haven't had a genuine barometer. I reckon Brad Close is nearly their barometer. When he plays well... if you have a look at the games he's played well in, they rarely get beaten,
yep,
which is stupid to say for a little skinny half forward who looks like he needs to sort of, you know, get through his local and KFC and maybe have some popcorn chicken. But when he was his best game, I think you said during the call that was his career high stats.
It was 24.
Disposals. His tackling was fantastic. He set up that goal, that famous goal that Gary Rowan got with his tackle on Lockie Hunter.
Yep. 14 of his disposals were contested.
Yeah,
which was number one for the Cats.
He was on, Kingy. On. Like on. Absolutely on.
He had more contested possessions than Angus Brayshaw.
Yeah, who didn't play well in the first half. He played well in the second half, Brayshaw. But look, it was a good game. Geelong didn't have a passenger. We spoke about Rowan, Myers, Stengel and Close all played pretty well. Rowan and Close were outstanding. Myers was okay, and Stengel's just okay. Kicked a nice goal early. Thought it might have sparked him. He's just going. What's he kicked this year, King? He got 11 goals?
Stengel. He had 10 going in, and what did he kick last week? He kicked one, so he has 11.
He would have kicked 11 goals in the first three rounds last year.
He would have had it by round four, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
He's just going, old Tice.
Yep.
They need him to London Fog. If he was to join in and play well, and you've got Rowan, Close and Myers all delivering. I mean, Myers wasn't his best game against Melbourne, but he's been pretty good this year. Mm. They get those four firing. No Cameron this week. What do they do there?
Good question. Does Radigalia come back in?
Not up forward. Don't ruin the
No, I was just going to say not up forward, but does he come back in, and what does that then do? Does that shuffle Jack Henry forward?
Well, what was the hubba balooba about? Was Chris Scott saying that we're not losing Sava Radigalia?
Yeah, he's said, he's confident that he'll still be at the club next year.
Well, if he's not in the team tonight...
he won't be at the club next year.
Well, I don't think it'd hinge on that, but it certainly wouldn't help. If they've got him selected, already for selection... and they go in against this is a crucial game for Geelong, absolutely critical, and they don't select him.
Hmm.
Surely he's thinking, well, hang on, how's that going to work long term? Because the defenders aren't going anywhere. De Koning's only young. Stewart's not young, but in the wheelhouse of his best footy. Buse has got a few years left. Colin Jasny's got a few years left. Jack Henry's got a few years left. Zach Guthrie. So those defenders aren't going anywhere. So if they're not fitting him into the team for this week, I don't know. I think it makes you at least think twice.
The back line looks as good as it has all year. De Koning played with a bit of confidence last week. I reckon that might have been the hope. Well, hopefully it was the one that just turns the wheel for him.
That was his best game. They allowed him to play loose a little bit. He and Stewart. It still baffles me why teams allow Stewart to play loose. And then they play their extra up on the ball, which is what Melbourne did. And
He'll torture.
He will. It seems bizarre that that is allowed to happen, but they did. And De Koning, I agree, that was his best game. Let's hope he can find some form now and have a run to September. I mean, Geelong have no certainties to make September.
Oh, I think they play finals, Benny.
Yeah, well, if they lose this week...
Nah, I still think they play finals. Five of their last nine at home.
Yeah, I agree, but they're not... You wouldn't be...
Or well, five of their last eight, actually.
You wouldn't lock it in, Eddie, would you?
Nah, I think they play finals. Just because I don't think the other teams around them are good enough to be there.
Big game this week, Bulldogs Freo.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, this week will be...
I'm confident Geelong will play finals.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident, Kingy, but I'm not, you know, I'm not sort of... It's not like it's a...
Are you being pessimistic and hoping to be proven wrong? Vaux
Rogue in the Australia Cup when he was a Cyril... Old Vic Rail thought that old Vaux Rogue was going to get the job done. You know, he stormed over the top of him. Dandy Andy. At 66-1.
Did you have a piece of that?
No, I didn't, Kingy, but I remember that vividly because Cyril Small was just on fire with Vaux Rogue and then it got mowed down late. So there's no certainties in sport. And the Cats are roundabout. I reckon this week, and we've said this, we probably sound like a broken record on the Kerr's hire. Jace will be listening, won't he?
He will. Yeah. Yep. Jared.
Hats off to Jared.
Hello, Jared.
Yeah, he loves the Cats. Gerard. He would have been off his plastic at GMHBA while they were beating the
Demons.
That
Demons. First 10 minutes, that's as good a footy as Geelong's played this year, that 10 minutes.
They were on, weren't they? Mm. But I just think that this week is critical because they've got two games at home after this, haven't they?
North Melbourne into Essendon.
You'd have to think.
Then go to Brisbane. I would want to win the next three because it's going to be tough darts going to...
That's right, but I think this week... will give us a snapshot of where the Cats are at. They're coming off a big win.
Yep.
They're playing a team that are not easy to beat, who are just hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Sydney 2 weeks ago against Brisbane. They were pretty good.
Yep.
I don't think Brisbane were that good, but Sydney pushed them. They only lost by 16 points. Last week, I don't know what you make of beating West Coast by 171 points.
Nothing.
But this is a good game for the Cats because if Geelong are going... I think if Geelong are going to be a factor in September... they're beating Sydney.
Hmm.
If they get beaten by Sydney, then they are where they are in terms of a mid-table team, and it's probably... This is where they need to start making their run because they've got some troops back. Dangerfield comes back,
yep.
Potentially Radigalia back in. Cameron out hurts, but you've got to be able to win without star players.
I think he can get away with it at the SCG.
Is Tom McCartan out or back in?
He's close to
played
a return.
Played in the twos last week.
Yeah, so we'll find out tonight. We're recording this Thursday
Franklin.
Afternoon.
Franklin?
Won't play.
So they'll have, what's his name?
McLean will be...
McLean and Armadi.
Hardy, yep. Sign a new deal, Armadi, during the week.
Yeah, so they're young players. Geelong have got the defence to... So you probably send Radigalia, if he comes in, to Armadi, and De Koning goes to McLean.
Yep.
Would you be thinking that's... Unless you've got the two options there.
Yep. McLean's
Papley,
had a bit...
Hughes?
Yes. Papster. McLean's had a bit of success against Geelong.
He has. He's made a bit of his sort of bunny action.
Yeah.
What about... Haywood. I'd be going college, Jasny.
Yeah.
Although he comes up the ground a little bit. But
it's really interesting, the SCG, because of its dimensions about Stewart playing that sort of loose role. It'd be interesting to see how Sydney approach him when you've got a game or ground that's not as long, and Stewart can be as probably... That's a ground where he can be really damaging, but we'll find out. Big week for the Cats because a couple of absolute superstars the pleasure of watching up close for a heck of a long time were good enough to go into the Hall of Fame
together
on the same night, and what, one retired the year before the other. Bartel finished at the end of 2016, Enright at the end of 17. Did he go at the end? Was 17 his last year, Enright?
Fucking, you're the master of the years. You've thrown me a curveball. I've got no idea. I can't remember what happened to myself 14 minutes ago.
I'm just trying to think. Did Lonigan, Mackie, and Enright finish at the same time, or did Enright go on?
I think Enright went on, didn't he? Lonigan and Mackie definitely finished at the same time. And Enright might have gone on for one more season.
Oh, no, actually, Enright and Bartel went out at the same time.
There you go.
He actually went
out
earlier.
It wouldn't happen too often. Went out at the same time and are inducted on the same night.
Yeah, 332 games, Corey Enright. 305 games, Jimmy Bartel.
Yes. So it was fantastic, wasn't it? Yep. We saw those up close and personal for their entire careers. Different sort of players. And, well, I mean, they were next level, really. I mean, that group was next level, and they were at the top end of the next level. And you know, ironically, both took a little bit of time to find their feet.
Mm.
I mean, Corey Enright took 4 years.
Yeah, well, Enright was drafted 99 and Bartel drafted 01.
But, I mean, Bartel, there was question marks. He might have left Geelong in his second year when he wasn't being played. He was in the twos.
Yeah.
And Mark Thompson was trying to teach him to play defensively. I do know
he which rubbed off on a couple of grand final days.
He went to Lenny Hayes and shut him down after he had 1,000 possessions in the first quarter. But that's the sort of player he was. I mean, he could win a Brownlow, but then in the biggest game he could go and tag. Yeah. I think he laid 16 tackles that day.
Which is a grand final record still.
And Enright was the same. He took even longer than Jimmy to find his feet. I think he took 4 seasons before he came a regular senior player.
Everybody sort of took until 04 to really find their feet. And then Geelong made that, I suppose, surprising preliminary final run in 04, which sort of laid the foundation for what took place after that. Benny, we're about to get a very special man up on the line.
So we have actually, I know these listeners will be surprised that I've actually done some homework for this. This is the first time ever. And a man on the line played 253 games for the Cats.
Oh, he was a star.
Kicked 452 snags, if you don't mind.
Yep.
Three-time All-Australian.
Hmm. Three-time premiership player.
Three-time premiership player. Norm Smith medalist.
Yep.
And a golfing extraordinaire. Steve Johnson, the number 20 for the Cats, joins us on the line. Jono, welcome.
Yeah, it's good to be here, boys. Love the show, so glad that you gave me a call.
Did you just have to, as I was reading those out, did you just have to pull over and derobe?
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that introduction. You forgot to mention another 50-odd goals with the Giants, though.
I was going to say that. You kicked 43 goals with your first year as the Giants, which, I mean, that's all Australian sort of stuff.
Yeah, maybe the Cats just got rid of me just 1 year too early. But anyway, we move on, and they're going all right, the Cats. They're finals bound once again.
Yeah, they are. We wanted to obviously get your thoughts on a couple of your teammates who you played, well, pretty much your entire career with, or in fact, your entire career. And you had I think you were famous for the cash or credit to an opponent asking your front row seat to your show. But you had a front row seat to the Jimmy Bartel, Corey Enright show. And last night they went out together in the same year and were inducted. It was, given that you spent so much time with them, you would have been pretty proud last night.
Yeah, I was. I actually I missed the show, but I followed up and caught up with their interviews on KO. And, they're both very deserving recipients of the Hall of Fame honour. They're just champions, both over 300 games. All the accolades that they've had throughout their careers. And, yeah, you just sort of reflect on how fortunate you were to play with such great players. I mean, Scarlett's already been inducted into the Hall of Fame, Enright and Bartel, and then you're going to have, obviously, Ablett and Selwood and Hawkins, all these guys that I was fortunate enough to play with. It's just extraordinary. So, no wonder we had the success that we did through that era.
What made him so good, Jono? What set Jimmy and Boris apart from others?
They're probably both pretty different characters. Like Jimmy was a star junior. I remember playing under 18 footy with him at Big Country, and he was the captain. And he was destined to go on and play AFL footy. It took a little bit for him to actually find his feet and become that professional person that he needed to be. But once he did, he just became one of the most consistent players. Every single week, he always stood up in the big games. And when there was moments to be had, he was often the one that had the moments. And he was a match winner that could kick goals and win the inside ball as well, but equally smart enough to know when to go back and sort of support the defence and take a chop-out mark. So he done that consistently right over his 300-odd games. And Corey Enright, probably a bit different start to his career. He was a higher draft pick and a skinny kid from Kimber who just worked his ass off, to be honest. And then we started to see how good a player he was, probably after about his third or fourth season at the club. And he was just one of the best teammates, probably the most popular teammate amongst the playing group, because he was mates with a lot of the older guys, but he was also very good mates with the likes of Andrew Mackie and Tommy Lonergan and myself. So his career, six All-Australians, so reliable. When the ball went in his area, you knew that he was going to beat his man. And if it went in someone else's area, he'd often come off his man and take a courageous mark the other way and then generate some good attack for us. So that probably sums up those two players.
Well said, Jono. Did you know that Boris was going to be a Hall of Famer when he picked up two disposals in his underpants at the Gabba?
Yeah, that was a funny night. There was a bit more entertaining, something more entertaining that night. There was actually two streakers that come across, and they were absolute glamours.
Is that why your game went off at that point?
No, I think I kicked five or six. I think I'd only had one up until that point, and then I just got the adrenaline going. And Boris's jocks was just a side note.
They were. I think that was unfortunately the night that Matty Egan got injured, but. Boris obviously had a twinge in the pants. They reckon once he did kick that ball in these jocks, he was always sort of working to the fat side.
Yeah, well, he's pretty well sported in that area, so he wouldn't have minded running around in the jocks.
I think he had the speed on that night.
This conversation has gone where I didn't expect it to.
That was extraordinary.
Hopefully this doesn't go mainstream, boys.
No, this is sort of underworld sort of arrangement. There's only hardcore Geelong fans.
This is dark web arrangement, Jono.
We'll be listening to this. Jono, have you started penciling your or penning your Hall of Fame speech or not?
No, I haven't, because I haven't been inducted. I think I was eligible last night as well, so those boys got the nod over me. But what I did sort of make note of is how well they both spoke in their acceptance speeches. Like, I think I'd freeze up there in front of the, that's the footy royalty in that room. Like, that's where you if you're ever going to go to a function, that's the one function that you'd love to actually be a part of, and actually, to have a standing in the game to be a Hall of Famer, that would be incredible. But I did really like the way they spoke and were interviewed, and then the way they thanked everyone throughout their career was pretty well done.
So Bartel, Enright, Scarlett out of that the group so far, Jono, we expect Ablett, Selwood and Hawkins will be walk-ups when they're eligible. I think Gaz might become eligible in a year or two, and then obviously Selwood and Hawkins, I think it's 5 years post. Is Joel Corey one that probably needs to be talked about in that tone and will eventually find himself in there?
Yeah, I think he definitely should be in that conversation. He was a two-time Best and Fairest winner in that team. Often goes probably unnoticed by the people outside of the supporters of the Geelong Footy Club. He was one of the most important players for us, because we had the guys like Ablett and Bartel and those guys who would actually push forward and get a lot of the footy and create opportunities for us. But Joel Corey was the beast in our midfield that was probably the best two-way runner. So he was... collect a lot of the ball, but he'd also do a lot of the grunt work defensively for us. And who knows who's on the selection committee? There might be a few older sort of statesmen in the game that wouldn't maybe know a lot about Joel Corey. But if there was some selectors on that panel that were a little bit younger, they would understand how good a player he was.
Jono, yourself, he was 91 and 89 kilos. You were 189 and 95, but you played completely different roles. It's unbelievable how Joel Corey turned himself into such a beast. He was probably the Paddy Cripps prototype before Paddy Cripps came along.
Joel Corey was, I think he's pretty skinny when he first turned up to the club. He's got there 2 years before me, but one thing that those boys mentioned last night was how competitive our playing group was, and the thing that stood out for me was how hard we trained. Like, people might have seen that there was a lot of us that loved a good time off the field, but when we got to the footy club, there was a lot of animals, and he was one of them. Like, Joel Corey is a bloke that wouldn't say boo. You guys would struggle to have a conversation with him. If you walk past him, you would have done it over the journey. And he doesn't have a lot to say. He doesn't have a lot to say to his teammates, even around the change rooms. So if you get him on the ground, he's a beast, and he's the loudest player on the ground. He like screams and demands stuff of his teammates. So he was a physical. He had some physical attributes, but it was the way he trained and his work rate on the ground that made him such a good player.
How much did you talk on the field, Jono?
I just lipped to the opposition. Mearns and I used to pre-plan our jokes, so I would say to Mearns, "Oh, when I say this to this bloke, you've got to then follow up with this." Because, you know, we go into games of footy knowing that we're going to win,
yeah.
You drive into the ground going, I wonder how much we're going to win by today, because you just knew that we had such a ruthless team that were, as I said, competitors. It wasn't like we were ever going to want to take the foot off the pedal. So you were just so confident that with the playing group we had, we were going to win. So you start pre-planning your jokes and talk about how many goals we're going to kick between us and how many we're going to give off. And if I've only got three and you've got five already, well, you've got to get me up to four. So it was good times.
I can imagine. I think you were going so well that at one point a goat ended up in one of your meetings, didn't it, Mac? Did someone bring a goat?
Yeah, there was a goat in our meeting the week of Grand Final, 2007 Grand Final. It was an ongoing joke about one of our video sort of analysis guys about his goatee. And we had a joke box. So you put in a joke into this joke box every Monday. And on the Thursday, Stephen King and Henry Playfair would read out the jokes. And it was just silly jokes like, you know, calling Mark Blake Pinocchio, or what's the difference between Mark Blake and Pinocchio? Such big nose, and it would be something like, oh, Pinocchio drives a red car. Just silly joke for that. But there was always a joke in there about this bloke called Eugene, he's goatee. So anyway, on Grand Final week, Ronnie Watt, actually one of the boys, went out and got a goat from Ronnie Watt's farm and brought the goat in and said, we've found the answer to Eugene's goatee. And well, whatever happened, the goat was running around on the ground, and it was bloody 2 days before the biggest game of our life.
didn't Otto set fire to his old jelly jubes during one of those sessions?
Yeah, that was called the what do you call it?
Was that the mad minute or something?
Yeah, the minute of madness. If you turned up late to training or something, or you done something that you should, you know, receive a fine. You actually had to get up in front of the group and do a minute entertain the group. And I think he called the wounded group battle, something like that. But he got upside down. He walked in a robe, got nude in our small team room, done a handstand, and then got thirsty the body. George W. Bush up, and it went up in flames. So, and then it completely smoked down our meeting room. He's going to say, Bomber was in stitches, he couldn't believe it just happened, and then he had to try and keep a straight face and tell us how we were going to beat Essendon.
This is going into sportsman's night territory.
Those were the days. I was going to say, you actually, being a supporter back then, you were taking the piss most weeks in terms of, you know, you wonder how you kept your concentration. You'd be 10 goals in front at half time. I mean, you look back, and I've always said that, you know, people get a bit frustrated. I know Geelong won the premiership last year, but in, you know, previous when they were trying to win one, they get a bit frustrated. I thought, well, you'd think back to that group you had. I mean, that group you had probably beats the current day team by 10 goals. It was an amazing depth of talent you had at that, in that side.
Yeah, and if you look, like, one thing I often do when I think about that team, I think, you know, we might have been around the 100 to 200 game mark in 2007 when we won our first flag, but you look at the playing group and how they've all finished, and there's actually still some players that are playing. Actually, yeah, actually everyone might have retired from 2007 now, but everyone that played in those flags, basically there'd be, you know, at least 17 or 18 200 game players, whereas when we got to the footy club, there wasn't a whole lot of players on the honour board for playing over 200 games. And there's probably 400 or 500, 300 game players, maybe even more. So, we had an extraordinary team. I forgot to mention, actually, Chris Scott turned up on the back of... we're doing this Minute of Madness for about 3 or 4 years to keep it lighthearted. And he turned up in his first season of Jimmy Bartel's term for Minute of Madness, and about to go out for training, and Jimmy had to get up for his minute, and he tried to do an iron gut thing where he had a raw egg and ate a platter and whatever else, and then he had to he stabbed a VB can and sculled the VB can just before training. Chris Scott looked at him and thought, hang on, mate, what the hell is going on here? So I think
it got
ditched after that.
you said, so six players have played 300, Jono, and four of them came from your era. So Selwood, Hawkins, Enright and Bartel to go with Nan Curvis and Sammy Newman. So, unbelievable. And then you throw in, Dash played 292, Scarlo 284, Mac 280, Harry Taylor 280, Joel Corey 276, James Kelly 273, Mitch Duncan's at 266. Like, eight or nine of the top 15 at the club have come from your era.
Yeah, well, in my draft, 2001 draft, it was Bartel was taken first, then it was Kelly, myself and Ablett, father, son. I was the only player out of those four players not to play 300 games, so I ended up playing 293. So, Stephen Wells has got a lot of credit to take for the success of the club with the selections that he made back in 1999 and 2001.
Yeah, you're back in the northeast of Victoria. Wangaratta was home, but you're coaching Yarrawonga and you're making a good fist of this coaching cape at top of the ladder at the halfway mark, 7-2 with Yarrawonga.
Yeah, it's going well. So, I'm just getting used to how it all sort of operates. It's sort of a different style of footy, and I wasn't probably as well prepared as I needed to be because I hadn't watched any Ovens and Murray for about 22 years before going back. So we actually got caught off guard round one, and Aubrey beat us. And then we had a bad performance where we had a few weeks ago. But I'm starting to find my feet and work out who all the gun opposition players are and who we've got to put a bit of time into. And so hopefully we have a better second half of the year. But it's pretty close to the top at the moment.
You can't be much better than 7-2. And you're saying you want to have a better second half of the year. You're going all right.
Well, I hate losing. So,
yeah, true.
It doesn't matter if it's a game of table tennis or whatever else it is. I just don't like losing. So when Aubrey beat us round one, I was pretty keen to get one back on them. And we got them last week at home. Yarra hadn't beaten Aubrey for 10 years in Aubrey. So that was a big one. And we'll have the Rovers who beat us in a couple more weeks, so I'll make sure the boys are ready to go for that one.
John, can I ask you, how's your body? You played a brutal style of footy for a half forward. You were pretty as tough as a $2 steak. How's the body some years after footy's finished?
My body's tough, to be honest. It's probably the most challenging thing, like, just in life, isn't it? Dealing with the ailments in my body. I had over 16 operations during my AFL career, and that doesn't even include my shoulders that are knackered. I've tried to set up a gym in the shed in Wang, which is all the off-leg sort of stuff, like the ski machine and the rower and the assault bike, but I can't go for a run. Even yesterday I went out deer stalking with a mate and up and down hills, and by the end of it my knee was blown right up. So I'm trying to get in to see Julian Feller just to get a bit of a trim up, but to be honest, all my joints ache every single day, so it's driving up and back to Melbourne that doesn't actually help either. So that's one thing that you players talk about, I guess the mental challenges, but it's also the physical challenges when you finish playing footy.
How many jabs did you have before you played in the 0-11 granny?
Well, I had four on the had four to get through the fitness test on the Friday, and then I backed it up with another four the next day, and then I might have five because I ducked in for another one at three-quarter time. But, yeah, at the time you do anything. Like, and I still would. Like, I think I played in three of the four grand finals, jabbed up pretty heavily. So, yeah, you do anything to get through and live your childhood dream to try and play in premierships, but it does come at a cost when you play for so long.
Fair to say that, you know, the rank and file supporter that goes with their thermos and their scarf probably, you know, has no idea what goes into to players getting to game day on Saturday. And there's, you know, I mean, you mentioned there's players probably each week, there are players each week that just play, they need, you know, injections to play each week. And your average supporter probably doesn't realise the depth of that for players just to be able to get out there and play.
Yeah, and it is rare that you actually feel $1 million. Particularly if you do play a contested brand footy, there might be a few wingers out there that are pretty good physically, and you don't see many of the top players that played a physical brand of footy out there running or, you know, pounding the pavement during the week. You wouldn't see too many of the ex Geelong players that wouldn't have seen. Maybe Mackie might be out there having a run around the Barwon River, is he? But
he'd be in the gym.
He wouldn't know what a gym looks like.
He was extraordinary.
He'd just spend the whole time in there talking to people when they're trying to do their weights, and we were giving him the feedback, mate, put some size on those sausage arms, and he just never did. And his skin folds were always the highest. And he'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. He'd go around there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and he's eating cheese and crackers with dip every single day.
Oh, I tell you, still didn't stop him playing about 270-odd games for the Cats. Jono, do you think that the club should maybe just, you know, go through you? Since you've departed, the 20 hasn't exactly taken off. I think you need to maybe just get down there or contact someone at the club and say, look, just send all candidates through me and I'll decide who wears the 20.
I thought they retired the number, so that's not true.
Well, James Willis has got it at the moment. No knock on the young fella, but we haven't sided him at senior level, and I don't know who took it straight after you.
The bloke that Ryan Gardner from the Bulldogs, he didn't play in it, and then Oscar Brownless just sort of held it for a little bit. I think he must have been there for about 3 years, and then. Yeah, so the new bloke that's got it hasn't been able to debut yet either.
So nobody's worn the 20 for the Cats since round 22 or whatever it was in 2015.
I think you need to get involved there.
One thing I do know, if you see a number 20 jersey floating around Kidinia Park, it's because of me.
Yes, that's 100%. The other thing too, John, I was just going to mention that, you know, Cat fans quickly forget, but you finished equal third in the 2013 Brownlow. You're ineligible. Who'd you biff?
Well, I can't remember. Probably a few, because I actually missed six games that year. I finished three votes behind Gazza.
Yeah, Selwood was second.
He got 28 and I got 25, but I missed six games. So I did remind him that he's pretty lucky to have that Brownlow, because I think it was the record amount of Brownlow votes per game for anyone that's played more than 10 games. So that's one thing that maybe I would have been in the Hall of Fame had I won that one.
I think you're destined to get in there.
You're right.
I just had a look. It was
That's the thing. That wasn't actually, that wasn't anywhere near my best season. It was just that Chris Scott threw me into the midfield with a couple of those more senior players sort of drifting out of there. It's just funny how the Brownlow medal works. Like my best year is probably 2007, 8 or 9 or something like that, or 10, where I was playing forward, but you don't actually get too many Brownlow votes, and then you go in there and you think, oh yeah, I've sort of had a half decent day and end up with two Brownlow votes. So that just shows how much of a midfielder or what it is.
Yeah, I was going to say that the top 10 that year were Ablett, Selwood, Dane Swan, Steve Johnson, Patrick Dangerfield, Dan Hannabury, Scott Pendlebury, Tom Rockliffe, Trent Cotchin, Kieran Jack and Nathan Fyfe.
That's fair.
There were some pretty handy players playing in that season, or finished top 10 in that Brownlow. So, and you were robbed. 25 votes in missed 6 games. That's extraordinary.
Get that out there a little bit more.
We also need to get James Willis out there a bit more so we can see the 20 again.
We've missed it.
I think he's been injured. I asked someone just recently what's the go with this young kid or
who's
got the number 20, and I think he's been injured, but he might have just come back. So
yeah.
I hope he can get out there and I can see the number 20 run around again.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jono. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're one of the stars of the competition and stars for the Cats in one of the eras that I don't think any Geelong fan will ever forget. So good luck with the Pigeons getting the job done up there, and hopefully we can get you on K-Rock for a game if you're trundling down this way.
No worries. No, that sounds good. Thanks for having me, boys. Cheers.
How good to talk to the 20. Yeah, what a star.
What an absolute... He was a champion player, and he was as tough as a woodpecker's lips.
Yeah. We have got questions.
Dogger, his name was.
Yes. Yep.
Dog's body.
Yep, they still refer to him as that.
He had an unbelievable ability to gut run.
Yep.
He wasn't... I don't think he was the world's greatest trainer.
No, and he wasn't a great athlete.
And I don't think he... You know, he probably liked a dart and a vanilla slice, I think. But he had an ability to gut run, which... not everybody can do, and he was next level half forward in the competition.
To those who sent in questions, we won't get to them today. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but it was good to catch up with Steve Johnson. We will get you to fire them back into us for next week's edition of the Cat Attack podcast. Just for those going to Sydney and want to listen to us at the SCG, carrockfootball.live, so you'll have the ability to listen to us inside the ground. But well done to Boris and Jimmy, and Corey Enright is going to join us in the pre-game tomorrow night. See you in Sydney, Benny.
Looking forward to a key big one. Put your helmet on.